Greetings, Derek. How are you doing today?
You know, I'm good. I'm good. I am a little bit, shall I say, anxious about the stories that might come out in the second half of this hour. But until then, I think I'll be good.
All right. Well, today we have a little bit of a different show for you, everybody. It's Derek's 20th anniversary in the business, both in the business of strategic marketing, competitive intelligence, but also in the business of Aurora. He was first day on the job, March 1st, 2003. I've been loving every minute of it, Derek, that we've been working together and business partners here the last two decades. So congratulations. Let me be the first to congratulate you face-to-face, I guess. We've got kind of a special show today. We're gonna be doing our usual unthinkable first half. Derek's got some memories he's going to be sharing. We've got a lot of friends I see in the on the bridge. So hopefully all of you brought a story about your time with Derek that you can share during our unspeakable second half. And remember, unspeakable is really kind of no holds barred. I'll encourage you all to cuss and swear if you feel like it. If you want to tell stories about, you know, embarrassing situations that Derek got into, it's kind of a hashtag no limits, you know, no boundaries, so to speak. The guardrails are off. And as you can see from my technical issue there a second ago, anything goes today. So with that, Derek, congratulations. And if you want to join the second half, please let me know in the chat on the Zoom bridge. If you're watching this on social, you need to get on over to openrecon.com/RITF, running into the fog, openrecon.com/RITF, and register to come on the bridge and join us here if you've got a Derek story. So Derek, I know you had a few remarks prepared. I'm going to turn the mic over to you and I'm going to go mute for a second.
I was joking with Eric, everybody, that in lead up to today, I should get double POAPs since I'm technically the guest and a co-host all at the same time. So I better get my second POAP from this session today. I think technically we're calling this an episode in our series. It's episode 62. You know, it would be remiss for me to not acknowledge the fact that we've had 62 of these moments in time together, Eric, to bring on a guest, one form or another. Usually they're far more interesting than your guest today. And, you know, that's a great privilege for us to be able to do this together. I know that maybe like a lot of our listeners, we all know of brother combos that literally can't stand one another. And not only are they repelled to even be in the same room, they are just not very good friends. And you know that I'm eternally grateful for that. That is not the way our relationship rolls. You know, the memories of March 1st of 2003 are numerous. I might talk about some of those today, but you know, I could talk on this podcast about all the times you were a jerk to me when I was a kid. You know, like that time that you shot me at close point blank range with a BB gun, mind you, with no shirt on. And I think our dad was literally digging that BB out of my belly with a hot knife. I could talk.
Once I outran him down the alley, he was chased after me.
I could talk about the extreme fog and grief of losing our parents and kind of going through that together. Again, a lot of siblings, whether they be brother, sister, brother, brother, sister, sister, whatever it might be, you know, they go through those moments and they can serve as defining points in time where they either bring siblings together, like they did in our case, or they cause separation. And, you know, again, one of the main themes of my remarks here in the first half of today is all about family. And, you know, I will talk in a few minutes about how I'm not a believer in coincidence. And I think that the passing of our parents was, while we miss them, you know, every day to this day, the passing of our parents was a pretty important, non-coincidental set of milestones that allows us to get to this 20 years together. And, you know, the third thing I could talk about is the uncertainty and sort of downstream effects of having a certain client project go really, really sideways on me about 4 months into my time here. Not of an ethical variety, but just from a delivery and client communication point of view. While you were helping Tina, you know, with some of the consequences of, you know, your firstborn's birth, you know, I'm not going to talk about that today, but suffice to say that particular incident still drives, you know, a sense of hustle and humility that I think is pretty important to the way in which we go about what we do, you know, together and independently, you know, but on behalf of this company. Or the fourth thing I could talk about is the intense communication fog that the pandemic put upon the Johnson brothers. You know, we both know that at the time of the pandemic, you know, we were not communicating in a way that was necessarily all that loving or positive. And what was the outcome of that? This podcast. And this podcast is something that now 62 or so episodes later, you know, it is a very human exercise. And I'm going to use that as kind of a sub theme here in a few minutes. Again, my time here at Aurora has always been about family. Obviously, you know, we have donned the jean jackets for today, March the 1st of 2023. There's a famous picture of us. We were probably, what, 5 and 9, give or take, of us in our jean jackets way back in the day that still circulates even on this podcast from time to time. I think it's fun that we, even at the ages of 48 and 53, we bring these things out and sort of act like we're young again. I think that's pretty important. Growing up together as brothers, you know, watching and navigating all the extreme circumstances that we've been through together, you know, passing of our parents, client situations, writing big checks to hotels for meetings that never happened. You know, I could go on and on and on and on about all that's happened in 20 years. But the fact is, you know, we are a resilient duo, and we are finding a way to make what we do really fun, you know, on a day-to-day basis, even if that includes, oh, I don't know, getting stranded in Detroit like we did last Wednesday night on our way over to the eastern edge of Pennsylvania, which we'll redo that trip here in, what, a few weeks, I think. You and I find a way to make it fun together. And I think that theme of family, you know, we meet people at every turn. Sometimes these people are not destined to be part of Aurora WDC. Other times they are. Sometimes those people are destined to be long timers, lifers maybe. You know, I can remember times when, you know, sizing up our current chief research officer was a true exercise in guile. You know, who was going to break first, JT, if you're listening? You know, that was a memory from 2006 or so. Hiring good friends, John, you know, best friends.
John is out there, but John's on the bridge. So JT, if you've got a memory, please plan to join us. Seems like yesterday he does in chat.
Really does. And the, you know, hiring good friends to head up strategic undertakings for our business, you know, that can come along with some little extra baggage from time to time. But the way you and I have always at least seemed to set aside, you know, the relationship as brothers and, you know, go about it in terms of being business partners in this adventure together. And you might remember what I told you way back 20 plus years ago when I joined you. You remember what I said? I said, if this ever gets in the way of us being brothers, I'll be out of here so fast, it'll make your head spin. And I'm glad that even in despite of some of the chaos and poor communication that a pandemic or other types of subactivities brings together, that the brother relationship really perseveres.
Yep.
You know, the even for some of those people whose time at Aurora is shorter, I think that the old saying applies, once you're in, you're always in, you're never out. And I love that we have countless examples, you know, of that. I love that there's times when we have to champion the cause of people who have moved on from, you know, our small team, and we get that opportunity to do that out in the external world. And, you know, I would just say that that's one of my favorite things to do. I love the mercenary element of, you know, cradle to grave project scoping and winning and delivering. That I still love to this day. But being able to have our team really operate as a family. I don't know. I think that's probably the greatest gift I've been given in the 20 years here. And let's be honest, I've had a front row seat to situations that are pretty tragic. I've watched somebody on the playing the back half of their career lose their wife. I've watched staff members have tumultuous and uncertain moments with siblings. I've watched parents sort of our staff members deal with situations with their parents. And I think the one thing that always prevails is that, you know, the common tie that binds in this activity that we're moving through together is the sense of family and purpose, purpose around family. And that is an intensely human activity. You know, you and I have talked a lot recently about how there's a role for technology to be playing in our business and in the field of strategic market and competitive intelligence. But if you ever lose that human element, are you really doing intelligence? And I would argue the answer to be no. You might be synthesizing data and you might even be developing some insights, but are you really delivering intelligence in the absence of integrating true human intelligence into the activity? And are you ever really going to have an impact, whether it be on something that matters for a client or something that matters for one of our staff members, if you dehumanize the process? Those are my opening remarks. Any reaction to that?
Well, hopefully you can hear me and it doesn't break up on us, but I agree on all counts, Derek. I think, you know, as I think about what our superpower is, it's really love. And I know that sounds cheesy, but those of you who know us understand exactly what we mean by that. Sarah Soriano in the chat just said, "You're the brothers I didn't know I needed, but I'm so glad I have." That's really a privilege. That's part of what, you know, we're privileged to do, is to be brothers to anyone who needs a brother, frankly. And you've brought me into relationships with people that I never knew I needed or want to know. And you've done the same, or I've done the same with you, I think, in like kind. But I think what we're doing, this is more than just a business. You know, this is about having relationship and being in relationships with people. And, you know, the reference to human intelligence, has really had a big impact on our sort of brand positioning and how we go to market, especially coming out of pandemic lockdown when, you know, I joke that we finished a reorg right after the rebranding we went through about 2018. And who knew that we'd need to have another reorg 6 months later when the pandemic hit and completely, you know, glassed the world, so to speak. It was a clean sheet of glass that we were confronting. And that's what really led to our kind of communications breakdown, was the fact that I won't say I was in panic mode, but I will say that I had more uncertainties at that point, that kind of mid-March 2020, 3 years ago now, almost to the day, I had more uncertainties on my mind about what we do next than I'd ever had. And realizing that the pandemic was going to be an overcorrection, you know, we were going to societally on a global scale overcorrect, and we did. Because when you don't know what's going to happen, people with control of the situation tend to overcorrect. And knowing that there was an overcorrection coming, knowing that the software and the research consulting businesses really needed to stabilize and figure out what our clients wanted, because we didn't know. We didn't know what our clients were going to need during the overcorrection, if that makes sense. They didn't either, really. I also knew that we were out of the learning business for the foreseeable future. So we had to cancel the Reconverge G2 meeting, unfortunately. We're bringing Reconverge back in 2023, a different operating model entirely than what we were working under up until 2020. Incidentally, for those of you who have been to a Reconverge event, we hope you'll get re-engaged with us as we roll this out with our university partners here in the new year. And, you know, I think the nature of human intelligence involves the ability to feel emotions. And that's always going to be a really, I'll say hard, maybe impossible forever thing for software to do. As I exemplified in an essay that I wrote in February that describes the nature of being human as being able to have choice, and choice involves sacrifice. Software can make choices, but it can't make choices about the things that it itself desires or finds desirable. And the reason for that is because software can't hope for the future. Software cannot feel hopeful about a future that it can't see. And so the combination of choice and hope really is how I would define human intelligence, is that we need humans to make choices because software can't be responsible for the consequences of those choices on others. If, you know, your Tesla has to choose between running over a grandmother or an infant baby, who's responsible for the choice that the Tesla makes, you know, in the process of piloting itself. So because that accountability is missing from choice, and because software, I don't believe will ever be able to feel hopeful about a future that it can't control, there will always be a fundamental need for human insights. And those human insights have to recognize that that's really how decisions get made. Decisions get made based on appetites and feelings and emotions, not based on pure logic or rational thought, if only. But then at the same time, if that were the case, that wouldn't be very much fun either. We'd just be a bunch of robots. Right. We'd all be living in the matrix, so to speak. The architect from my essay last month would have won, right? So with that, I'll make another call for you folks who are on the bridge today to volunteer to share a Derek story starting in about 9 minutes. I need a first hand raised from somewhere out there. Terry Thiel, thank you for already volunteering. You're our default number one, if no one else jumps in there. But I'd like to just share the story of that Derek alluded to, which was completely unprepared, by the way. I don't know if you were completely unprepared, but you were pretty unprepared to take the wheel of the company in July of 2003. So about 4 months after Derek joined the company, my wife had some complications with our first child. And I had to say to Derek, try not to go out of business while I'm gone. And I hope to see you soon. But you're in charge. And the steering wheel was kind of doing one of these for a little while until Derek figured out how to grab it. And I think you would agree, Derek, that you would not be CEO today if you hadn't been pressed into that role of running everything 19 and a half years ago, almost. So any thoughts about that?
I'm still learning, you know, 20 years deep into this role. And, you know, I would encourage anybody that doesn't think that they're kind of a perpetual learner or acquirer of knowledge, you know, you might be having an opportunity to kind of rethink the intake process of knowledge itself. 3 or 4 months in, I still didn't know jack or squat about competitive intelligence, nor did I know in our world some of the critical characteristics of delivering what we do, you know, comes along with demanding respect from clients, showing respect to clients, you know, creating, you know, strong and solid reports, you know, and that moment I alluded to, I can't tell you, you know, we practice a little too much client identity discretion here. I wish I could tell you, but I will tell you this. That client, there's some advertisements on the TV that when I see them still drive me back to the summer of 2003. And, you know, is a huge reason why I get up and get after it every day. Some days are better than others, but at the same time, you know, there's a sense of urgency and hustle required to live on this side of the fence. Not that those who work in corporate roles don't have to also demonstrate that, but I would argue it's a slightly different viewpoint. Yeah, I talked earlier, Eric, about not being a believer in coincidence. I've said it more than once in the open that if one or both of our parents hadn't passed when they did, one or both would have talked me out of joining my brother in this business. It wasn't because they weren't, you know, intensely proud of what you were doing. Of course they were. And it wasn't because they thought the only thing that Derek could do that would make him happy was to, you know, pursue this career in the investment industry. They probably knew, you know, from my childhood and early adulthood that I could do all sorts of different things and be, you know, find joy in that. But I think they probably would tell you if they could these days that back then they would say those two guys are a little bit too different, you know, for them to be able to create a sustained business, you know, interaction, you know, for 20 plus years. And I think it's kind of fun for us to be able to kind of prove them wrong to a certain extent. You know, this coincidence thing, I look back at everything that's happened to me in my life. And, you know, if you are a believer in coincidence, I don't know how you reconcile necessarily how certain things happen. Of course, bad things happen to good people. That's a day-to-day thing. And that's not what I'm talking about. But if you look at some of the signs that we're giving, you know, at different points in our life, or, you know, some of the, just the, you know, the guideposts, if you will, that say, you know, these two brothers ought to join forces and go do this. I think that it's pretty neat to look back on that phenomenon here 20 years later and just kind of, especially in the context of how we're writing this book. You know, this book that we're preparing everybody is kind of a pretty different nature. The missionary and the mercenary, we've talked about it in the podcast a couple episodes ago. We had our ghostwriter Wanda Thibodeau on with us. And, you know, it's a different style of book. It's certainly designed to have our 10 chapters look at current day business scenarios. There's plenty of those that will be in this book. But for me, the even more rewarding elements of this book are the childhood and professional memoirs, you know, encounters that you and I have had way back to like when we donned these jean jackets as 5 and 9 year olds, all the way to present day. Some of them are hard, sort of tragic stories to retell. But you know who I think we owe it to put those stories on the page? We owe it to our folks who instilled in us, you know, I think the values and the characteristics required to be, you know, number one, committed husbands, you know, present fathers, engaged team members to a staff that is seen and goes about their day-to-day as family members, you know, of this venture known as Aurora WDC. All of our partners, I think if you were to poll them, they would say the same thing. And that's the really cool thing about looking back now 20 years later is, you know, again, if you don't believe in coincidence, mom and dad sort of got us to where they needed to get us, and then kind of got out of the way to a certain extent and, you know, allowed us to move this forward. And that's not meant to say I miss them dearly. In fact, yesterday would have been their 58th wedding anniversary. And I'm not even kidding on this one. They met on Valentine's Day of 1965. And they were literally married with a pastor in front of a church 2 weeks later. And just prior to our dad passing, they were at almost 34 years of marriage. So, you know, that's a it's kind of a fun story to retell, even if we haven't seen them now in many, many years. The other thing I would say about myself, and then we'll get into this other stuff, I'm good at really only two things. I'm a people person and a numbers guy. Which one comes out the most in my day-to-day here at Aurora? It's probably kind of balanced, I would say. The one I love the most is the people person. You know, I've been accused of being, you know, a mama bear protector to our teammates. And I take a lot of pride in that. You know, sometimes it means that we have some discussions about maybe things that could have gone better or constructive criticism, but we do that usually behind the curtain. And there's that element of kind of protecting our staff, protecting our teammates, you know, that is displayed to the outside world. The numbers part, you know, that's not unimportant, especially for a, you know, a brothers duo and a staff that is committed to remaining private and not ingesting a whole bunch of venture capital to grow. Now there's pros and cons to that. You say, well, you know, if we took X amount of dollars to build a team and build, you know, all the great stuff that a lot of these companies in our space are doing, you know, maybe you could grow faster. However, it's going to come at a cost. And the cost is generally going to be, you know, there's going to be some type of exit event necessary or expected in order to give those investors their payback. And, you know, that's the one thing I've always appreciated about you, Eric, is our complete and total alignment on, you know, this is a venture not designed or even interested in that outside investment concept. And, you know, I think I told you many years ago that if you were wired that way, I'd probably left a long time ago. And, yeah. You know, I think that's just kind of my opening remarks. And now we get into that part of the podcast where my anxiety level, like I wish there was maybe a blood pressure monitor on me, and it might be fun to watch kind of where this goes from here.
Well, if you haven't yet, you've got about 30 seconds to scan your POAP and get one of these like I just did for Unthinkable. Before we put up the Unspeakable POAPs, we've got Terry Thiel is on deck right now to take over as interlocutor here with you. So Terry, just one second. Craig wants to see the picture of us in jean jackets when we were little. I don't have that handy, but we'll post it to the Twitter feed or something later on today. And we have to say goodbye to you folks on social. So those of you on social who haven't registered yet, openrecon.com/RITF, running into the fog. Go over there and register. And until next time, we'll see you back here in 2 weeks, by the way. It's my favorite holiday of the year, March 15th, Death to Tyrants Day, Sic Semper Tyrannis. You can't miss that one. So please come back in 2 weeks if you can't join us on the bridge. Dosvidaniya, folks on social media.